Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And it's best of week here on the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. And Sean Carey here. Sunbury Motors, Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Steve on baseball broadcasting duty tonight. Medlar Field at Lebrano Park, home of the State College Spikes, and also home of the 2018 New York Penn All-Star Game. Shikellamy baseball alum, Maryland baseball alum Nick Dunn will be your leadoff hitter for the South All-Stars tonight, the lone member of the State College Spikes that cracked the starting nine for the South. So congratulations to Nick Dunn on that. Of course, we'll have baseball here on WKOK tonight as the Phillies are back in play, starting a two-game series against the Boston Red Sox. Going to be Nick Pivetta on the mound for the Phillies. 6:30 will be the airtime for On Deck, and 7:05 first pitch here on WKOK. Pivetta 7-9 going up against Boston's Rick Porcello, 14-5 with a 4.17 ERA. And then another matchup with the Red Sox tomorrow night at 7:05. And then the Phillies go into a five-game weekend series with the Mets, including a doubleheader on Thursday, so we won't have a show for you on Thursday. And that five-game series will wrap up at historic Bowman Field in Williamsport Sunday night for the MLB Little League Classic. Live coverage here on WKOK will start at 6:30. First pitch just after 7. University of Maryland President Dr. Wallace Lowe said the university accepts legal and moral responsibility for mistakes made by its athletic training staff at a workout May 29th, which ultimately led to the death of 19-year-old offensive lineman Jordan McNair on June 13th from heat stroke. The university has parted ways with Assistant Athletics Director for Sports Performance Rick Court. He resigned on Monday, according to a letter that he posted on social media, and reached a financial settlement with the university today. Dr. Lowe said he and Athletic Director Damon Evans visited McNair's family in Baltimore earlier today to express on behalf of the university their apology for the loss of their son on that fateful day. They entrust their sons to us, and he did not return home. According to a member of the McNair family, McNair had a body temperature of 106 when he was admitted to a hospital May 29th, and nobody from Maryland called 911 until an hour after McNair suffered a seizure at 5 p.m. that afternoon. McNair died 2 weeks later. And according to preliminary findings from a university-hired external investigation, the Maryland staff did not take McNair's temperature at the workout and did not apply a cold water immersion treatment and did not follow the emergency response plan appropriately. So again, out of all this, the head coach, DJ Durkin, is still on administrative leave. So we're going to talk to one of the Penn State football greats from linebacker U, Jason Cabindo. We had a chance to talk to Jason right after the 4th of July, so we have that replay in just a little bit. But now we'll go to our play-by-play call of the day. Phillies fans, well, they had the day off yesterday, the Phillies did, so they were keeping close tabs on the Atlanta Braves and their doubleheader against the Miami Marlins, and history was made by one of their young stars.
Marundi Gonzalez, winding, and the first pitch to Acuna is crushed. Center field, deep. That ball is gone for Ronald Acuna. He starts both games of the doubleheader with a leadoff home run. That's his fourth leadoff home run since he took over as the leadoff man right after the All-Star break.
Braves Radio, WCNN with that. The 20-year-old phenom with two home runs to lead off both games of that doubleheader. Actually, he has now gone deep in four straight games. So how about this? The Elias Sports Bureau determined Ricky Henderson, the famous Hall of Famer, of course, Harry Hooper, and Brady Anderson. Yes, that Brady Anderson, former Baltimore Oriole. They are the only players in baseball history, and now Ron Acuña Jr. can add him to the list. They're the only players in baseball history to hit leadoff homers in both games of a doubleheader. So the Braves taking two last night from Miami. So Phillies need to get back home and make some hay. They're going to be tough tonight and tomorrow night against the best team in baseball with a record of 50 games over 500. Boston on pace to, what are they on pace for? 115, something like that? 113, 115 wins. Insane. They are running away with it. Jason Kabinda. What a great career he had at Penn State. Now looking to make an impact in the National Football League with the Oakland Raiders. And Steve had a chance to talk to him right before training camp started last month.
Earlier today, I had a chance to talk with former Nittany Lion Jason Kabinda, now with the Oakland Raiders. Jason, since the end of your, quote, Penn State career, what kind of whirlwind has that been to get you to this particular day?
It's been a long journey, obviously. A lot of college football players, the end goal is to be able to, go to the league, go to the NFL, and make some noise. So you take it one year at a time, and as you get to your junior and senior year, depending on how you're doing on the field, and for me, it was looking good. That was a good shot that I'd be able to go to the NFL. So that started becoming one of my individual goals, something that I was working towards. So being able to do that right now and kind of living out my dream and going through OTAs and rookie minicamp, mandatory minicamp, all those things, it's awesome.
When you got to OTAs and mandatory minicamp and so forth, you want to know right away, how well can I compete? How well do I stack up against other people? When it was over with, what was your thought?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. You grow up, you watch in the NFL, and you watch guys like Derek Carr and Marshawn Lynch, and then be able to be on the same field with them and competing against them. It's hard to describe. It's hard to describe. But being able to be out there and competing against those guys, realize, really not far off, I think that's where the motivation really kicks in and makes you want to work even harder, knowing that, you're closer than you think,
Did it help at all in the transition to have a Saeed Blacknall, for example, also out there with you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough when when a draft happens and you end up where you end up, and then, a lot of times you don't really know anybody. So being able to have Saeed there and just having somebody there who's going through the same thing that I'm going through, who I was already very close with, helps a ton.
What was the process like after the draft, and how many, look, a lot of people don't realize that, a lot of teams get in touch with you after that. Did you find that there was a lot of interest in what made sense with them?
Yeah, Coach Gruden had called me, and had let me know that they really wanted me, really only a few picks before the draft had ended. So I had a good idea that, if I wasn't getting picked up with those last few picks, that was probably where I was going to go. He was pitching it real hard. And, I had a few other offers from other teams, but, Oakland's offer list was, easily the best one. So it was pretty much, no-brainer, to be honest. And being able to go play for a guy like Coach Gruden, I think I'm the kind of guy who's really his type of player. That's what he said on the phone. So I'm just really excited to get this opportunity started.
Also at Penn State, it was mandatory for every starter except for the quarterback to be on a special team or multiple special teams. In order to make a 45-man roster, versatility is important. Do you feel like you have an advantage over some other guys because you were forced to play special teams here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a pride thing. As you keep going, higher and higher in football, in high school, I'll be completely honest, special teams didn't really matter that much. I think it wasn't until college that I realized how important special teams were. And then obviously now getting to the NFL, you know, special teams really is a huge part of the game. And it really, really is. It's a very important part. It can be the difference in the game, in fact. So, you know, knowing that, knowing that this is my rookie year, you know, most rookies, you know, you're playing special teams. And, you know, it's not easy necessarily going from being that guy who maybe only played one special team because he started on offense or defense or whatever for, you know, multiple years. But for me, I've already done it. You know, I've already played special teams. I have no problem doing that. So I really hope that, you know, that attitude that I have towards special teams and being very willing to play any special team, you know, helps me out in the long run.
You also were an every-down linebacker here, too. Does that give you an advantage based on the competition around you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just not only being an every-down linebacker, but being a guy who, you know, played the middle, had to make all the calls and adjustments. I mean, you got to really know the defense inside and out, and I'm taking that same approach, you know, to learning this defense and learning this system right now. You know, I'm trying to pick everything up as fast as I can, make sure I'm being confident, you know, in my calls and stuff. Very easy, you know, being a rookie and making all the calls, but you got to have the confidence, got to be able to step up in there and do it. So it's been pretty fun so far.
Is it a more complicated scheme or is it just different verbiage?
Definitely more complicated, I would say, and different verbiage. So it was tough to, and it's also tough just to have to flush out everything you did, you know, in previous years and know that no longer means anything, you know what I mean? And being able to install completely new stuff and a completely new defense.
What was it like when Christian Hackenberg was there for a week?
It was cool, you know, seeing him, being able to see him out there. You know, it's tough. And at the time, we had four quarterbacks. No really wasn't getting any threat. But it was good having another guy who I played with, you know, in that same locker room, being able to talk to and see him and stuff.
Jason, what's the regimen right now with camp just a couple of weeks away?
Just working out, just getting ready for camp, you know, making sure I'm staying in shape, continuing to work out. I mean, you really have 3 more weeks. So really just getting everything you can out of these 3 weeks in terms of development of your body and making sure you're just ready to go in your top shape, all that stuff.
When you're at OTAs and mini camp and so forth, what became apparent to you where you said, okay, I need to work on this. I need to be better at that?
Just when, you know, you go out there and anytime either you make a mistake or and I think for me right now, it's just about understanding the defense a bit more so that I make sure I'm putting myself in position to make my plays. You know, so for me, it's about better understanding, just more studying film. And I think just one other thing I need to be better at is just pre-snap. I've always been a real smart linebacker. I think in the league, I think a lot of times you can make even more plays if you're able to pick up what the quarterback is trying to say, how he's audible, what the offensive linemen are doing, reading what side they're sliding to. You know what I mean? If you can really get into those minute details, and really pick up on those things, like those things, like that guy, that DJ, like Derek Johnson, the 12, 13 year vet,
right?
Multiple Pro Bowl guy, stuff like that. He picks up. Well, if I could get myself to that level, then I think I'm gonna really, really love what I'm gonna be able to do on the field.
Is there a veteran that, you know, look, I know jobs are at stake, so I've got that part. But is there a veteran you've looked at, talked with, and tried to be a sponge and absorb items from that you think can help you?
Oh, yeah, Derek Johnson, easily. I mean, I've been in his ear 24/7 as much as I possibly can, asking him question after question. I think it's a really neat opportunity to be able to play with a guy like him who's had so much success on the field, especially, you know, playing linebacker. So, you know, he's a guy who I'm constantly asking for feedback. You know, when I watch his reps on the field, I'm asking what he saw. When he made a play, you know, what did he see? What made him react the way he did? All those kinds of things.
And last, I mean, when you look at your career, you go through high school, you were the best player, confident player. You get here to Penn State, it didn't take long for you to start. What's it like for you right now where it's a different level, The weeding out process has continued because, you know, you got weeded out to the top level in college football. You now, it gets weeded out to the very top level in professional football. So what's it like for you? Are there nerves? Is there confidence? How are you approaching this?
You know, I think it depends on how you prepare. You know, for me, I know my confidence comes from my preparation. I know that I'm able to go out there and work hard, knowing that I've outworked other people. And for some people, that's maybe different for someone. For someone else, they may be able to go out confident because of how much film they've watched, or go out confident because they know how fast they are. You know what I mean? For me, it's my work ethic. So knowing how hard I work and being able to train with other guys and see how they work and stuff, and knowing the kind of work I put in, that's what's able to give me the confidence to go out there and play the way I need to play. And at the end of the day, if you're not confident, you know, you're most likely you're not going to play well, and you got to. You know, you ain't got nothing to lose. You know, you've gone this far. You know what I mean? Might as well just go all out.
Well, you're a credit to the place. Your family's a credit to the place. And I know a lot of people here hope you do really well, because work ethic and personality, you will have earned it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. Thank you, Steve.
Jason Kabinda, now with the Oakland Raiders. Now, I thought the interview with Jason Kabinda, I thought, was compelling. This is the life of an undrafted rookie that all of us know is talented because we all watched him play. So we know he's an every down linebacker. There are certain areas where, with Jason, that, okay, let's get to his pluses. Number one, he's really, really good at knowing defenses and reading offenses. So that goes back to the middle part where we talked about pre-snap. Notice the difference he made in the Penn State defense when he got back in there against Ohio State in the game where everyone remembers Marcus Allen blocking the Durbin field goal and Grant Haley taking it for a touchdown. Everyone remembers that part. But that was also a game where they thought, in getting Jason Kabinda back, who got hurt in the opener, in other words, he didn't play against Pitt in the second game, and Brandon Bell, who got hurt during the Pitt game. Well, finally, they got them both back, and they were expecting them to play maybe 25 plays. Maybe 25 plays. Remember, it's their first game back in 6 weeks. Maybe they're going to play 25 plays between the two of them. Ended up playing, each one of them ended up playing over 60. Remember how Kabinda moved the defensive lineman around and how active he was that night? It was a difference maker. So that's a plus on the pro level. He knows where people are supposed to be. He can read offenses really, really well. I think he plays the run pretty well. Now, he will avoid blockers. He can be a little bit better at shedding them. And in the pass game, he's good, but he has to be a little bit better in terms of the depth of his drops. Just a little bit better, like a yard or two deeper, and understand that an effective drop is so important. So he can be a little bit better there. On special teams, he'll be terrific. He will be terrific on special teams because, again, James Franklin play all the starters except for the quarterback. They all play on a special team. Minimal. Some, obviously, there's some that play multiple special teams. Well, that's for the current group because, again, you have your better athletes out there, which helps out your special teams because they're so important here. They're critical here. James Franklin wants to win games in any possible way he can, include special teams. And number two, it prepares them for the pros, where they go to play on special teams and they're looking around saying, I've covered a kick before. I've covered a punt before. That's something Derek Williams told us, that he had to really change his mindset when he got to the NFL. Suddenly, he's running down. He's been on kickoffs before, but receiving. Well, yeah, he received kickoffs for the Detroit Lions, but guess what? They also had to have him cover them. You only have 45 guys. So suddenly he had to get used to going down and covering on kickoffs. Jason Kabinda doesn't have to do that. He's been through this. This will not be unusual for him. because everyone here is required to be on at least one special team. So for him, it's going to be natural, and that's going to help him make the team. That will help him make the team. So those are some of the areas that we talked about during the course of the interview. You missed any of it, you want to hear it again, stevejonesshow.com. How about the conversation we had the other day about with Dieter Kurtenbach about Boogie Cousins?
Oh, he's awesome.
About Boogie being an acquired taste. Boogie is an acquired taste. No doubt about that. This may be one of those that say the Warriors are successful and they win again next season. Cousins can then parlay it, and Cousins becomes one of the reasons why. I didn't say the key reason why. A team has Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Sean Livingston, Steph Curry. I think they're all going to be Iguodala. They're all going to be the biggest reasons why. But if this guy gets in there and helps, he'll be able to get a big money contract next year.
I think there's a lot of people. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there. It's like, oh, geez, they're going to win another title next year. But the thing is, though, when you talk about professional sports, I think lots of people love dynasties. I mean, look over the years, in the NBA, the Chicago Bulls, in college basketball, UCLA, John Wooden. And look at all the football teams that have been dynasties, the Steelers, the Cowboys, the 49ers, and the Patriots. It's all, there's a big connection between pro sports and dynasties.
Nobody likes road work. And we've seen a lot of it this summer.
And there's more.
Roadwork is scheduled for North 4th Street in Sunbury on the 16th. So now is the time to get to Sunbury Motors Ford before the roadwork begins. SMC is on a mission to sell 50 vehicles in just 5 days.
Before the roadwork starts.
Save up to a whopping $16,200 on the area's largest selection of new 2018 Ford trucks. Choose from over 80 trucks with new 2018 Ford F-150s slash to as low as $25,995. Pick from 56 2018 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $18,820. And there's 0% financing for up to 72 months, plus discounts as high as $5,000 on many new Fords. SMC has 21 2018 Ford Focuses, starting at $14,925. SMC is on a mission to sell 50 vehicles before the North 4th Street road work begins. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And our best of week continues. Sean Carey here at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai. North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia. On the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And recently, Steve had some ideas to improve Major League Baseball.
All right, let's get into some numbers here. As we know, baseball is struggling. Now, financially, they're not struggling. I mean, let's be straight. Financially, baseball is not struggling. But is there short-term gain for long-term problems? Dan Shaughnessy in the Boston Globe wrote an article in yesterday's paper, a column in yesterday's paper. And courtesy of the Globe, this is what he wrote yesterday. He said, the Red Sox may be red hot, but baseball is losing in every way. Now, again, you're hearing this from a person, I love baseball. Okay. This is what he wrote in the Boston Globe, and I think it was in yesterday's Globe. The Red Sox Sunday completed their three-game sweep of the Kansas City Royals. Aggregate score, Boston 32, Kansas City 13. The Sox are now 62-29. They won again last night, 5-0 over Texas. They're 63-29 now. They're 34 games over 500. The Royals have lost 9 straight, 27-31. Kansas City is now 39 games under 500. The Sox come home Monday and get to play last place Texas for the next three nights. Then we'll get a weekend look at the, as he puts it, morbid Blue Jays, who are 20 games out of first place. On and on it goes. Meaningless game after meaningless game as the Red Sox put up cartoonish numbers while we wait for the real games to start in October. So much winning. Now, the Phillies are in a different spot, by the way. The Phillies are in a race right now, and they're not running away with anything. This isn't exactly breaking news, but as great as the Sox weekend was, as scalding hot as the Sox are now, my takeaway, Dan Shaughnessy's, is that Major League Baseball is in trouble. As much as I love the game, I can no longer defend all things that are hurting the sport. So now he gets into what he thinks is hurting the sport. And a lot of this I cannot argue with, Sean. You may have an argument, and I'd like to hear it. There are too many bad teams. Correct. The once proud Orioles are 41 games under 500. Can you believe that? They're 41 games under 500. The Orioles. I mean, these are the Orioles of Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Mike Cuellar, Dave McNally, Jim Palmer, Bobby Gritch, Merv Rettman, Cal Ripken Jr., Eddie Murray. Oh, my goodness. They're 41 games under. There are too many non-competitive games. Correct. There are too many strikeouts. Correct. There are not enough balls in play. Correct. Baseball stars are increasingly anonymous. Correct. You know, Forbes puts out the top 100 around the world. There's not one baseball player in the group. Do you know that? The only guy that's cracked it in the last 4 years has been Mike Trout. Is it any surprise that Major League Baseball attendance is taking a hit? 21 of the 30 teams are down from last year, and baseball is on a pace for its lowest total attendance since 2003. Folks are staying away, and who can blame them? The product is not keeping up with the times, and it's not very good. That's his opinion. Here in baseball-savvy Boston, the Old Town team is playing at a near-record pace. But it seems that local sports fans only want to talk about the Celtics and NBA free agency, Tom Brady and Julian Edelman. Try to find a good baseball conversation. Spend an hour alternating between the Sports Hub and WEEI and take note of how little baseball conversation you hear, unless it's another caller calling in to complain about David Price. He is, you know, up in Boston. He's kind of like, okay, we're paying him how much? Baseball has become the sanctuary of senior citizens. Hardcore baseball fans are the same people who have landlines still in their homes and still read daily newspapers. Anybody see my sporting news lately? Pace of play has made the game largely unwatchable. The outstanding Tom Verducci, Penn State grad, recently put his stopwatch to work and calculated that the average time between balls in play, 3 minutes and 45 seconds. This is unacceptable. It is killing the sport. There is simply not enough action. Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe goes on to write, strikeout inflation is a big part of the problem. I have grown to hate strikeouts. A strikeout used to be a measure of a pitcher's dominance. Not anymore. Everybody strikes out all the time. A 10-strikeout effort by a starting pitcher is no longer a big deal. For the first time in history, baseball features more strikeouts than hits. This will be the 11th consecutive season in which Major League Baseball sets a record for strikeouts. One of the problems is that the players don't think there's a problem. Shaughnessy writes, the hitters have no regrets about striking out. He's right about that. They don't change their approach with two strikes. They just keep on hacking and missing. It's all about launch angle and exit velocity. Spot on. USA Today recently polled 63 big leaguers, and the results demonstrated a stunning lack of awareness. Players evidently do not believe that today's strikeout glut or the stale-like pace of play present any problem. More than half the players polled said they are unconcerned about a game that now features primarily walks, strikeouts, and homers. 93% of players who responded believe that the lack of action is okay. Asked if pace of play changes are working, one player remarked, you assume that there was a problem in the first place. There are simply not enough competitive games, especially in 2018. The Orioles are on a pace to lose 118 games. The Royals are on a pace to lose 116. The White Sox are on a pace to lose 108. Analytics are out of control. Yes. Even Commissioner Rob Manfred agrees. Manfred recently told The Athletic, there is a growing recognition that analytics have produced certain trends in the game that we may need to be more proactive about reversing. The owners feel that way. There are fans that feel that way. Meanwhile, as the game is taken over by geeks, his word, the players become more faceless. Mike Trout, great player. Why isn't he as popular and as well known as Kevin Durant or Steph Curry? The 2018 Red Sox are winning almost 70% of their games, but are studiously bland. Boston's clubhouse is populated by polite young men who are careful with their words, rarely interesting, and never provocative. Now, again, that's not the players' fault. You can't ask the players to do your job for you to make it more exciting, okay? If that's the way they are, it's the way they are. It's as if they are trained to drain the color from their commentary. J.D. Martinez is having a Triple Crown-worthy season, but would likely not be recognized if he strolled around the seaport at lunchtime. Is that Mitch Moreland, Brandon Workman, Matt Barnes, or J.D. Martinez? No controversy, no color. Again, that's not the players' fault at all. Zero. He says, there's not a Wade Boggs or an oil can Boyd in the bunch. Sometimes that's good. There is no all-world point guard insisting that the earth is flat, Kyrie Irving. We trust and verify that the earth is round, but in the summer of 2018, baseball is flat, even when you have a worthy first-place team with a raft of all-star talent. How about that column by Dan Shaughnessy?
Very impressive. I will admit, though, I still think a pitcher that gets 10 strikeouts a game, I still kind of hold that in high regard.
I hold it in high regard because starters aren't usually around long enough to get 10. But how many games when it's over with have there been double digits by the staff? I mean, double digits by the staff. Getting 10, 12 strikeouts, again, you got a lot of guys only going six innings, so that is impressive. But there are too many of them.
I love baseball. Football, baseball, basketball. You know, I love all sports. Just enjoy it. Let's start with numbers. Average family of four, when they put everything together between tickets and parking, if you want to get a little quick bite to eat, will spend $443.93 at a sporting event. For the Chicago Bears to go to a Bears game, that's the highest number, $685.10 for a family of four. In Major League Baseball, the most expensive team is to go to Fenway Park and see the Red Sox. For a family of four, $360.66. The New York Knicks are the most expensive team in the NBA to go see, $676.42, and no surprise, in the NHL, the most expensive game to go to is the Toronto Maple Leafs game at $572.58. Right now in the NBA, in the last 12 years, their attendance is up 2%, 17,830. The NHL is even where they were 12 years ago, 17,446, so there's just a couple either way. MLS is up 35%, up to 22,106. The NFL actually has seen, since 2010, a 5% increase in attendance, 67,405. Right? The Steelers played in 98.9% of capacity this past season. The Eagles played to 103% of capacity. Baseball is down 7% in attendance from the year before. Thirteen teams in the NFL had 100% or better on attendance. In baseball, the Phillies are up 825 fans per game. They're playing well. Their fans know it. They're into it. They're enjoying it. And if the Phillies keep playing well, that number is going to go up. The Pirates? Well, the Pirates are in that category of teams that play bad baseball that Dan Shaughnessy was talking about. Maybe not to the level of the Orioles of 41 games under or the Chicago White Sox or the Kansas City Royals, but the Pirates are right now a bastion of mediocrity. and the fans are telling them that they are. They are down 293,000 fans this year. They're down an average of 6,513 a game.
It's a beautiful night in Pittsburgh last night. They didn't even get 20,000 in there.
Nope. To see an interesting team in the Nationals. Okay, the Penguins play to 101% of the capacity. The Flyers play to 99.9%. Now, obviously, the arenas are smaller, more compact, but, you know, and especially the NHL, they need the attendance more than any other sport. Where are we in college football? There are factors in college football I think we've got to talk about that are never talked about. It's always just a bland number. Okay, so college football drew 42,203 per game last season. That's the lowest attendance in years. Okay. But remember, when you compare the numbers to a dozen years ago, okay, they're drawing 3,700 fewer. But there were 120 teams back 12 years ago. There are 129 now. The nine that were added did not bring with them 80,000-seat stadiums. The nine that were added in Division I are playing in stadiums of between 30 and 40,000. Okay, smaller stadiums. So they're not going to up the attendance. In fact, 30 schools last year actually saw their attendance go up. Penn State was fifth among that group. Penn State last year had an increase of 6,450 fans per game. They were third in attendance behind Michigan and Ohio State at an average of 106,707. And Penn State last year was fifth overall, playing before 1,146,641 fans. Okay, the SEC attendance down. Big Ten, slightly down. Big 12, significantly down, 6,000 fans a game. Pac-12 down 4,000 fans a game. ACC down 3,000 fans a game. Now, some of these, remember, there have been expansions in these leagues over the last dozen years, so the numbers get a bit skewed. Take the Big Ten, for example. They added Maryland and Rutgers. Rutgers has 52,000 seats. Maryland has 48. That's not going to up your average attendance. College basketball. Big Ten slightly down, ACC slightly up in 12 years, SEC down, Big 12 really down, a couple thousand fans a game, and Pac-12 even in terms of college basketball numbers. All right. Revenue. The stated goal of Roger Goodell is to have the NFL at $25 billion. They're at $13 billion right now. $7.2 billion comes from television. The television ratings last year, as we know, were down 10% on Sunday Night Football. They were down 6% on Monday Night Football. Fox was down 9%. CBS down 11%. The average age of an NFL viewer is 50. In 2006, the average age was 46. The NBA, $5.2 billion in revenue. That's what they're worth. $2.6 billion, half of it comes from TV. In 2006, the average age of an NBA watcher was 40. Today, the average age of an NBA watcher is 42. The NBA Finals had a 10.0 this past spring. Back in 2010, it was 10.6. So it's right in the neighborhood. It depends on the matchup. The NHL is a $3.7 billion industry, of which $600 million comes from television. The average viewer in 2006 of an NHL game was 42. The average age of an NHL viewer today is 49. The NHL Stanley Cup Finals had a 2.7 rating. 12 years ago, it was 1.8. So it's doing okay. The Premier League is a $5.3 billion industry. MLS is $461 million, $90 million of which is from TV. The average age of a soccer watcher, 40 right now. In 2006, it was 39, so about the same. Should be pointed out that of those who watch MLS, in the world of soccer, MLS makes up only 6% of the viewers. The rating in 2006 for MLS was 0.2. The rating in 2018 for MLS is 0.2. The PGA Golf Tour, the average age of a viewer was 59 in 2006. Now the average age in the PGA Tour is 64. And now we get to baseball. Baseball is a $9.5 billion industry, very healthy, of which $1.5 billion is from national TV contracts. The average age of a baseball viewer in 2006 was 53. Now that average age is 57, second only to the PGA Tour. The average age of a college football viewer, 52. 2006 was 48. College basketball, 52. Average age in 2006 was 47. College football, ABC went down 18% in ratings. CBS was down 10%.